I want to kind of start with, you know, the stage twos and stage threes, you know, and one of the things that we have is our patients that have stage two, stage three colon cancer. And, you know, based upon some of the studies, de-escalation, you know, especially with the stage threes that are, you know, low in terms of N1s, T3 M1s that are like low risk. Well, we do like the IDEA study with maybe 3 months of CAPOX. But then we also have to think about the T2s with the ctDNA. I know there's some studies with the dynamic study. And so how do you use ctDNA in your practice for the stage two and stage threes? Any guidance there?
Absolutely. So circulating tumor DNA has been evolving as a significant prognostic biomarker in the field of colon cancers, especially stage 1, 2, and 3. I think it has a huge role to play in both MRD and surveillance windows because it has been shown to be prognostic of recurrence. So in my patient population, any colon cancer patient who has underwent resection, I like to check circulating tumor DNA within the first 4 week window. In the studies, like in Bespoke or Circular Galaxy, they use 2 to 10 week window as an MRD window. I prefer to check it sooner, preferably, you know, once, if not even twice. I like to follow the dynamic algorithm where they checked at week 4 and week 7. Although it might not be feasible for all of our patients to check for it, some of the companies offer phlebotomy test, home phlebotomies. So that I use that as an opportunity to check for these patients as a blood draw, even at week 7. So, and when these results are out, that greatly helps me in navigating these patients through in this treatment. I mean, of course, we're still way too early to make any comments of ctDNA-guided escalation or de-escalation outside a clinical trial in a stage 3 colon cancer. But from stage 2 colon cancer standpoint, dynamic study, now we have 5-year overall survival, 5-year follow-up data, that has demonstrated that ctDNA-guided management has been non-inferior to those patients who follows, you know, standard of care therapy based on current NCCN guidelines.
Absolutely. And, you know, sometimes those stage 2s, like especially the T4s, are kind of tricky because imagine if you have a T4 and they end up with like peritoneal disease because you have a perforation. So, you know, I think those stage 2 T4s tend to have the highest risk. And some people even say that you might even have a ctDNA that might be negative if they have peritoneal implants. Have you seen any of that in your practice, Madan?
I tend to agree with that. I'm a little, you know, more careful with my stage 2 T4s to follow the dynamic data, although the data looks still strong even in the T4. But as you rightly alluded to, these are the patients that could potentially have micrometastatic disease in the peritoneum. And we know from existing data that peritoneum is not a great shedder of circulating tumor DNA into the blood system. About perhaps 70-75% of those patients are positives, and we still can miss 20-30% of the patients with positive peritoneal disease. I do have some patient experiences where it's the stage 3 treated with adjuvant therapy. Circulating tumor DNA was detectable, but I couldn't find disease anywhere else except 6 months later, a patient had a peritoneal recurrence. But on the other hand, stage 2 T4s, I like to be more cautious and perhaps offer them adjuvant chemotherapy. I may not offer them CAPOX or FOLFOX, but at least we'll talk to them about adjuvant 5-FU or Zeloda, you know, for 6 months in those patients.
Absolutely. And you know, sometimes, and, you know, once some of these patients are a little bit older, you know, like especially if in the 80s and late 80s and stuff like that. And, you know, you start wondering, like in terms of the adjuvant treatment, you know, as one of the leaders in GU cancers and colon cancers, what do you typically do for those patients that are in their 80s that might still have some good performance status? Is there anything that you have any guidance for those patients?
Is to make sure I understand the question right, is that question more directed towards in addition to the chemotherapy that we offer, or even that covers the chemotherapy landscape as well? Like if I have an 80-year-old elderly patient with good performance status, what would I?
Exactly. Like even the adjuvant or maybe even the metastatic setting, because I feel like these patients might be undertreated and they might not even be treated at all. So any guidance there?
Yeah, I know. Absolutely. So, I mean, I think in the stage two, stage three, it is quite clear in my practice. If it is stage three, good performance status, even if they're 80, you know, it's T3N1, thanks to the IDEA study, 3 months of CAPOX is good enough. And I talk to the patients, you know, and see if they have any neuropathy baseline to start with, if based on their hobbies or what they do as for quality of life. So that's how I usually navigate some of my treatments in that aspect. Stage two with the ctDNAs, if I have two or three ctDNAs being negative, I even offer them, hey, let's watch you, and continue to, because we tend to overtreat it, reached 50% or more of patients with chemotherapy. And if they're like elderly, I think that would give me another, added layer to suggest that perhaps maybe we could even watch them if they're borderline performance status. In the metastatic world, I think what I would do in my practice is I would take off the 5-FU bolus right away. For these patients, it can be a little more hard to take with mucositis and other side effects, really neutropenia, and even start with maybe 80% oxaliplatin dose, because my discussions for my patients in the metastatic setting, if they're elderly, is, hey, we are in this a long time. It's a marathon. We got to run this together rather than a sprint and get exhausted and you can't run further. So I think the longer we have those conversations with the addition of targeted therapy and being able to continue the chemo, those would be how I manage my elderly patients in the metastatic setting.
Yeah, I love how you customize this for our patients. I mean, our elderly patients, you have to kind of have a special focus, especially in the metastatic setting. And so that's a good segue for metastatic cancer. And so just for the people in the audience, that we have two different types of ctDNA, liquid biopsies, and one is tissue-informed. We're tissue-informed are patients that have surgery. And as our good friend, Dr. Pashtun Kazi would say, use that surgery tumor biopsy as like a barcode to look for, tissue-informed ctDNA in the blood. But then we also have liquid biopsies that are tissue agnostic. So for whatever reason, if we can't get a biopsy, which we recommend for everybody with metastatic colorectal cancer, by checking these different driver mutations. And so for stage four metastatic colon cancer, it's about next generation sequencing. And now we have so much data now. And so especially with the Breakwater study, with the BRAF mutation. So Madhav, what do you think about that in terms of next generation sequencing? And how does that guide your first line metastatic colorectal cancer patients?
Absolutely. I think, I would say next generation sequencing should be a standard of care. I mean, there is no doubt about this. Should be no second thought even, I think. And even in my practice, I tend to perform both tissue and liquid biopsies together for these patients because of the fact that tissue still is the gold standard, as you rightly alluded to, is we still need to obtain tissues for diagnosis and all that purposes. However, the addition of liquid biopsy gives us that added layer of heterogeneity that we tend to miss by getting the tissue biopsy. Tissue, you may get a biopsy from one or two portions of a pie. I call it a tumor as a pie and I mean, as a big, cake. And if you part of the cake or like a pie, you might miss some of those alterations. Whereas the liquid, because of the tumor shedding nature, you could capture, number one, more alterations. And number two, it is rapid. It is faster turnaround time within 2 weeks. And with more and more data, as you rightly alluded to, with the Breakwater study, when a key example of patients with BRAF V600D mutation, there is excellent data now to support using targeted therapy even in the frontline setting with the combination of encorafenib, cetuximab, and FOLFOX, modified FOLFOX 6, we need to have that information to make these changes in the real-world practice. And realistically, tissue-based testing is not going to help us get that only by itself. So hence, we need to add those liquid biopsies to help us being able to detect these mutations and make that change and use that data that we have incremental benefit with these agents in the patient population that we treat.